The Lowdown Chronicles. Meet your maker.
Well, hello, podcast geeks. Welcome to a new episode of Lowdown Magazine's very own program, The Lowdown Chronicles, Media Maker, a new series that puts the well-deserved spotlight on the people that essentially help to shape the ever-evolving pop culture universe as we know it. In true Lowdown fashion, this illustrious circle of international guests won't be put together from one specific spectrum only, but is assembled from the many tesseras the bigger picture is manufactured from. Which means, obviously, contemporary art, skateboarding, music, fashion, film, graphic design, illustration, and everything in between. My name is Sven Fortmann, aka 40, and I'm not only the editor-in-chief of this fine publication named Lowdown, I'm today's host as well. And with me today is Mr. Alex Flach, aka Foley.
Hey, hi.
A Berlin Urgestein, as we call it, who's not only known for his strong affinity for skateboarding, photography, and the left field part of pop culture, but for making Berlin's retail landscape more beautiful and more relevant as the creative mind behind the vitally popular store named Civilist.
Thank you. That's very kind.
And very true, actually. And obviously, like, to be honest with you, that feels like a tiny bit weird, like to sit like now opposite of you, like since basically like the two of us, like we traveled the globe, so to speak. As Lowdown's roving reporters back in the heydays of the magazine when, magazine culture actually was a thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had some crazy nice trips throughout, mostly like Europe, but also we went to Asia together and stuff
went
like
to
that.
To Canada,
all right, Toronto.
Yeah,
it's actually pretty weird sitting. Usually we were sitting next to each other.
Exactly, yeah.
And now I'm sitting on the other side of the desk.
Like, was there anything you took away from all the traveling we did? You know, like, as trivial as it may sound, like, for me, basically, it almost revealed, like, the secret to having, like, a satisfying life, which basically comes down to making friends and being surrounded by them.
Of course, I think... going back to all the trips we did together, in general, I think traveling is like a really important part of this whole thing. I think it put me to where I am today, mm-hmm. because as you just said, meeting all those people, music, streetwear, shop owners, record label owners and stuff like that.
Right.
Mostly like really, really creative people as well, like like-minded people. And I think this goes for a lot of people that I know, that those trips somehow definitely shaped us.
And absolutely.
Maybe even opened doors in your head, like of maybe getting new ideas for like future projects. And so I think the whole traveling thing is one of the biggest and most influential part of the past that I have.
I'm
to be honest, nowadays that I'm running a store here, this is definitely the biggest part that I'm missing. It's like those
trips.
I can
imagine that, yeah. I mean, like 2020 besides, with all the new restrictions it's offering.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely, I totally hear you.
Yeah.
Like before we start to talk about the I would call it Civilist Empire at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about like a little bit of about the past. Mm-hmm. So obviously, we know each other through the Lowdown magazine and. You were the photo editor there.
Right. Yeah.
And which feels like being like a lifetime ago, basically.
Absolutely. This shows somehow how old we are already.
But that, how did this gig came together back then? Like how did he came on board?
Actually, like most other things in my life, before I was a photographer, I was like a skateboarder, pretty regular, nothing like special, but we had a nice crew here in Berlin. And yeah,
that was back in the West Berlin days, basically, right?
This was even before the wall came down. And like probably like 2 or 3 years before the wall came down, when I started skating. So it was, yeah, pretty small, famous Berlin crew that got me into, skateboarding. And after like a few years, like the wall came down and all this stuff, of course, my mother at a certain point said, "Hey, Alex, it's time to do something after I finished school." I had no idea. I was a teenager. So, she said, "Okay, you can still live at home, but it's not cool if you just skate, drink, party and stuff like that." So I had to do something. So I started like an apprenticeship as like an insurance company. And within those 3 years, I picked up a camera from my mother's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's how I got into like, taking pictures like really randomly. Never was thinking about doing it as something for a living. So yeah, took it to skate trips, whatever, and just started to document my friends. And I remember through, I think the owner back then of the skate shop, California, I heard that somehow someone was planning a magazine here in Berlin or was already doing like working on it. And yeah, they were looking for like skate content. And I remember back then I was having my own little darkroom at home, doing my own prints and stuff. I got introduced to Thomas Marok from Lowdown. And so he was like, "Yeah, if you have any cool skate photo, especially of Sammy Hariti, who was like, or still is a legend."
Yeah, true.
I said, "Yeah, I have a few self-printed things." So I gave him one, and it was published on the last page in the first issue of Lowdown.
Okay.
And when I look at the photo right now, it's not really 100% sharp and stuff like that. But anyways, I was super stoked, and I think I was like pretty high for like a week seeing this photo printed in a magazine. And from there on, this was somehow like the spark, I guess, to see your photo printed. And so from that point on, I kept on shooting mostly my friends in the first place. And that's how it kicked off.
Okay, basically, obviously, as you just mentioned, like this was a no-brainer to, since you weren't really too sure like where this is taking you, like to basically focus on your circle of friends first. Because like everyone back then, you know, back then actually like there were specific scenes and subcultures. And so since you were very much aware of the skateboard scene back then and the music scene, so you shot a lot in this field first.
Absolutely. I mean, basically the camera was just probably the third eye,
right,
which I always have with me. So as I said, it was more or less like documenting my daily life.
Yeah.
I mean, not like super crazy going to parties and shooting like fucked up people, drunken, this, that, but mostly, you know, our daily life on the streets, smoking weed, whatever, drinking. Basically, it was more or less a documentary of my own life, and somehow then, because of a few guys in the group, was like there was a higher interest in certain people that I shot. So yeah, I was lucky to spend time with this crew. Because I was the one who had photos of the crew.
So do you still have these photos, or do you just have access to the ones which got printed?
I have them. They're all, of course, on film. So they're like basically in boxes and folders. I would love to go through them because there's probably 90% of the photos that I've never seen like printed.
Right.
Because we always printed or scanned the photos that we used for a magazine or a flyer or whatever. So there's probably so many photos I've never seen and like big. So hopefully I'll find some time one day, like to go through those photos, because even the ones that we use for the magazine is kind of hard nowadays, because they're like, back then you burned photos on a CD.
Or you try to save them on a SideQuest or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So most of my old photos from the early days with Lowdown, they're like on CDs. I have them at home, but I don't know where to put this fucking CDs because my computer has no CD slot anymore. Yeah. But it's actually something I really like about the whole photography thing on film. As I said before, there is so much footage that I've never seen that maybe one day when I find the time, you know, and pick out certain folders of our trips to the UK with all those musicians or skate trips and print some of them.
It'll be awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess like there will be like a surprise or two waiting for you.
I'm 100% sure, you know, like especially like now after all these years, because when I look back when Lowdown started and I got into photography, this is like, it's fucking 25 years nearly ago. So those photos, they're like, I hope they're still in shape because it's like a material that like, you know, works. So maybe the negatives and the slides after years and years, you know, so but there's definitely a few surprises, probably lots of things that I forgot, you know, maybe photos that I shot of you while we're sleeping in this tower in London somewhere.
In the FX Twin Towers.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, like what you just told, like, you know, like after you finished school, like you weren't too sure, like which direction you should head. And then so you started to give it a try at this insurance company and stuff. And then discovered photography as a hobby. Like was when your mom back then, like when she realized like that you're spending more and more time with the camera instead of like focusing on the job, so to speak, like can you imagine like she wasn't necessarily happy, right? Like was she like, oh dude, like this is just a loose cannon, like he's doing whatever he wants to?
Actually, I have to say my mother, I grew up with my mother. My parents got separated. Mm-hmm. It was all fine, but I stayed with my mother when they were separating. And she was, to be honest, always like really supporting what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Because I think she maybe saw maybe a sparkle in the eyes when I was doing photography instead of going to a fucking desk at an insurance company. And I mean, for her, she was always backing me 100%. It was more or less my dad, who was always like, as you just said, like, okay, you did these 3 years at this insurance company. And so this is something, you hold a paper in your hand after those 3 years that you made this, you know, so you can work at an insurance company or whatever. And my father was always the one who said like, oh, come on, Alex, like those photos, like no one cares. You can't make a living with taking pictures. And my mother was like always 100% like supporting this because I was living with her. So like she had a way better access to my life than my father had. She knew all the skateboarders like Sammy because we always used to hang out at my apartment or at my house with my mother. So she was like really supporting it and was always asking like, hey, show me. And you know, when it got printed in a magazine, she totally understood that I was sticking to the camera instead of like going with a table like office job, 9-to-5 kind of thing. And so she also really supported that after those 3 years at this insurance company, I finished that and I left Berlin for like 6 months.
Right.
With Schism.
Ah, the US trip, right?
Yeah, US trip where we bought like a camper van and I bought some camera equipment back then in New York, like a fisheye for my camera.
Yeah.
And so even that she was supporting. I saved some money, but of course she helped me out because 6 months in the US, you know, even if you live in a camper van, costs some money.
Yeah.
So she was always backing it. And even till today, like she's, everything I do, like she really, really supports 100%. And so I don't know, maybe this helped me and gave me a bit more like confidence to believe and like, okay, let's stick to shooting photos as well, because I don't know, like, if there would be like more pressure coming from home, it would be maybe different. But no, she was 100% always down.
Yeah, lucky you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, when did you realize that there actually like is a demand for your photography beyond the Lowdown universe? because like it didn't take too long. Like when all of a sudden like you started to shoot like campaigns like for certain brands or. Really like try to get your mindset in this direction of like, hey man, like I have like this pile of really cool stuff, like which I shot over the last years. Maybe I should really think toward like releasing it like through a book maybe, or.
I mean, basically, I think back then Lowdown magazine was the best platform to have because like back in the days, there wasn't anything like that.
That's true.
As a print medium, definitely not like in Europe, maybe in the US, and there was maybe in the US where some influence came from. Mm. But so I think for like certain brands that advertised in the magazine, they were seeing like, oh, this magazine is doing some really good shit here, like in all different directions, like music, skate, streetwear, whatever, fashion.
Basically showing this kind of like pop cultural universe like besides the mainstream, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think through that, they kind of were interested also in all these aspects. Hey, the photographer that works in this industry somehow, we would like to work with him as well. The same goes probably for like graphic designers that did shit back then. So because they were advertising in the magazine, they were like, okay, whatever, Carhartt, for instance. Like, hey, man, we have a little skate team as well. Do you want to shoot some photos or Vans?
Yeah.
So I would say, like, of course, it was my photos, but the platform itself, like the magazine, was more or less like somehow today would say as an agency. Mm-hmm. Because I guess 95% of all agencies in Germany or in Europe had Lowdown magazine laying around in their office somewhere because it was, very influential.
Was it like definitely a point of reference?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think this opened quite a few doors. And I think like after this whole like mostly skateboarding stuff that I shot, there were also requests coming in from magazine, like because we have a group of friends as well. Like, hey, there is a DJ here, there is a band there, there is a musician, whatever. You want to shoot him? Mm. And like going to a hotel, have 10 minutes with whoever, Lemmy from Motorhead or this or that. And this was like another good sidestep from like a skate photographer for a magazine that isn't only skateboarding, that has all aspects in. So exactly, I get the chance to shoot people that I really, really like. And that's when we both traveled a lot together, shooting like musicians and DJs and stuff like that, that I was really interested in as well. So this was also another way of documenting somehow my life as well, because when we went to London and to shoot bands like Thous from Mowax back in the days, I really liked the band a lot, so it was great to shoot them because I was listening to them.
Yeah,
and I think it's seeing other photographers like that were shooting mostly skate or for skate magazines, they somehow we're always only connected to the skate world, while I had the chance through the magazine even to start some streetwear shoots. Yeah. I was never like doing this before, but like, okay, if, you know, I can shoot skateboarders hanging out at a curb, I can, you know, give them some clothing and shoot them and make it like a streetwear shoot or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the magazine was really paving the way in most, lot of the direction for my personal.
I mean, like the big advantage we had back then that we never really had to do something which we were not into. So everything like we've did back then like came from this kind of fanboy perspective, which obviously makes it a lot easier to, you know, address people and hang out with them, you know, at their studio, in their art space, in the pub or whatever. So this definitely helped a lot, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, this is when I tell this now to the younger generations that I'm having around me because of doing the store and there's lots of young kids. So I'm always stoked when I see young kids as well doing those things. And as you totally, like 100% right what you said about doing something that we love to, where you wake up in the morning not with like, wow, my stomach hurts or something because we have to get up early again. Fuck it. It was always, even if we have to take a plane at 6 a.m. to London, it was for like a reason because we liked it. We knew we were going to meet like super interesting people, people that we maybe know for since then or for whatever.
That's the beauty of it, you know, like with obviously like not with each and everyone, but with a lot of the people we met back then, like during these 10 years, I'm still having contact with them and we're still basically like checking like how are you doing, how 2020 sucks, right? Like how are you holding on, these kind of things. And
it's actually pretty crazy sometimes because it's not only limited to like the small circle of whatever, like Berlin or Germany. It's like a global kind of thing.
Exactly.
Because I remember when we went to London, we met people like Gareth and those people. And so that's going back to like the early questions. That's why this whole thing was like so like interesting and shaped our lives because of all those people that we met. We are where we are right now because, you know, it's like, exactly that's why you're sitting here and why I'm sitting here right now. It's really great. And there's like, even with some people, like a long, long way looking back already on a long history.
Yeah.
Even if you just see them maybe once a year, you know, or maybe just via email or on the phone. But there's already like a quite long history with certain people that we met like 20 years ago.
Yeah, very true. And before we talk about like how you got involved with Sybilis and stuff, I remember like at this one time, like nothing dramatic happened, but you became like a little sick and tired of doing these kind of things like for the magazine and doing the photos and stuff. And I remember before the Sybilis idea was actually like popping up, like you already dipped a toe in retail water, so to speak, like at Nürnberger Straße, like at Hikmet store, right?
That's right. That's actually kind of funny because now, looking back at it, it feels kind of weird, to be honest, seeing myself in Nürnberger Straße at Soulbox. I mean, to make it short, I mean, the connection was back then was the Nike SB thing. Mm. And, you know, it's like I was shooting photos for Nike SB with the German team. And I know Hikmet I know him since probably 88 or something, or 87. Went to the same school. And of course, I heard of Soulbox. This was already like...
It was unavoidable.
Yeah, absolutely. And because of my work for Nike SB as a local photographer for certain ads or skate tours, I was like, okay, there is no shop really besides like having a big shop like Tito's. But that's not where Nike really wanted to go. And yeah, as you said, I was a bit tired of shooting photos and all this stuff and needed something new. Mm-hmm. And actually, I don't really know 100% how the final meeting with Hikmet came together. But all of a sudden, I saw myself like pitching him the idea of, hey, let's do a little skate shop in your thing because you could only get Nike SB when you wear a skate account. So I had this little extra room in Soulbox and of course we needed to sell like a few boards. So we had girl skateboards because I know some people from girl like Rick Howard and those people. We had already fucking awesome back then.
That's the thing. I remember like the first fucking awesome tee I ever bought actually like in Germany, which felt back in the days, like felt like surreal almost, like was at Soulbox.
Yeah. So because I had the contact to Dill, so we got it. And of course there was no other shop, I think, even in Germany selling this. But since I had the personal connection, we got a few all over print t-shirts, jackets and stuff like that. And also the Nike SB thing. Anyways, going back, we had a little skate corner at Sawbox, but since skateboarding back then wasn't that big as it is today, I was more or less still working in a sneaker shop.
Yeah.
So 85% of the day I had to deal with sneaker people because Sawbox was like a huge destination for that.
Definitely.
So after, I think I was there probably for 8-9 months, and then for me, this little retail experience was over because of the same reasons as we were talking before, because I had to deal with things I wasn't really into. You know, I'm into, like, of course, sneakers when it, as long as it's like skate connected, but I wasn't really into New Balance, Asics, Adidas back then, like sneakers, like where people were camping out. So
it's all about like performance and technical aspects. And
not only that, but also like the really hardcore sneaker community that was like sleeping in front of the shop for like a week.
That's where it all started. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I had to also deal with those kind of people coming in and not asking like, hey, do you have like independent trucks or Spitfire wheels? They were asking, hey, do you know when the next New Balance, whatever shoe is coming out? I'm like, no, not really. So I didn't really want to learn about that part, you know, like when, which shoe is coming out. So I had to leave probably after, I don't know, maybe like 9 months I left, because it was a nice experience, but not in my own environment, because it was too much sneaker and not like skate enough. But it was still, it was interesting to look over like Hikmet shoulders, you know, dealing with sneaker releases where people like lining up and sleeping in front of the shop for like 5 days.
Those poor bastards.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, Schimmerling. Yeah, nice.
And the Civilist store, you know, it's celebrating its 11th birthday this December. And like, even though I was, you know, back when Hesse and you like started the store, obviously, like I knew both of you really, really well. But still, like this kind of like early days, like the, I have just like a very blurry idea, like how it all happened. What I still find very fascinating, that actually like you, both of you did this together, because like it's no secret like that you were not always like the closest friends. So I thought like what's happening now?
Yeah, I'm looking back now. I'm surprised as well a little bit. No, but we know each other for like probably the guy that I know the longest, since like early 80s, because we went to the same like little school or whatever you call it. I don't know. So we had some issues, you know, it's like whatever that happens between friends, you know, and we didn't were in contact for quite some time before this idea with the store came up again after the Hikmet Sawbox thing, like years and years ago. It's kind of funny because probably we grew up very parallel. Like even if we weren't like friends at a certain time, but somehow we had the same path in life. We're both only childs, and we had like, you know, listening to the same music for a certain, for a very long part, and we skated together and stuff like that. So it was kind of funny to see after all those.
You were both raised by your moms.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's lots of parallels in both of our lives that we, you know, after quite some time when we met again and talked about like what happened in the past and why we, you know, couldn't really deal with each other anymore, that we both had like somehow the same idea, even without spending time together for quite some time. And I mean, lots of coincidences like brought us together, but somehow we both, it seems at least like that we had the same idea of, okay, what can we do in this city where we both grew up?
Mm-hmm.
Both working and living here and seeing where there were like parts or some things missing, like store-wise, galleries, all these things that we saw on our like endless travels, us two.
Yeah.
Berlin becoming this like super hot city in Europe. Everybody wants to come here, like mostly for like partying and stuff. So absolutely. So we thought like, okay, when we met and talked about all these things, like, hey, maybe in Berlin something is missing. And we both had the same idea. Hey, let's just give it a try. Because we have all those contacts to those people from the industry in the US that we can like call up and say, hey, we're opening a shop or we want to open. Can we get your stuff? And so we thought, hey, let's just give it a try. Actually, I think we both were pretty sure that this is going to work out, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because we knew like lots of our friends, they were like digging for the same brands and all this. You know,
so that's the thing, you know, like what you just mentioned, you know, like there already were like a few retailers in the city, which were decent, and they offered like some brands coming from a similar field, but it was not the thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's always like weird if you talk from your own standpoint and saying, yeah, we knew that, and we know only the cool people, and we know what people want, but we were pretty sure that what we were or that the things we wanted to offer in our space were things that people were looking for.
Right.
You know, like small brands like no one else had, but everybody knew, even if it was way before like the whole Instagram shit, whatever. But brands like anything, Huff, DQM, we all knew.
Mm-hmm.
But there was fucking awesome as well. But there was no store for it. So you still, if you wanted to get it, you either had to go to London to whatever hideout maybe. Or you ask a friend when he's like in New York or LA, hey, can you maybe bring me a shirt from like DQM?
That's the weird thing. Like, you know, like we're not talking about, you know, like the store opened in the 60s where there was no internet or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, like when Civilist opened, obviously like there was internet, but the brands you just mentioned, for some reasons, like there never was like an online shop or something.
I mean, there wasn't, I don't know, maybe there was, but even it sounds weird like talking about the time that is like just 11 years ago,
yeah.
But it feels like fucking another like 100 years ago, a century. But you're totally right. Mm-hmm. So it was just 11 years ago, and there was some online stuff, but people rarely used it.
Mm.
I mean, at least from the people that I knew. So, as I said before, you could get the stuff when you have a friend traveling and this and that. But the good thing for us was like, and that's something that still happens today, is everybody in our like closed circle of friends knew about these brands. But since we knew those people personally.
Right.
And they trusted us that like when we called them and said, hey, we want to open a store, do you guys want to sell us your stuff? Because those brands I was mentioning before, they were like super, super picky when it comes to where they sell their shit. So going back to like all the traveling, because we knew those people, we met all those guys in New York or LA or in London or on a skate trip, whatever. They trusted us. So they were like, nowadays, before you sell your stuff to a store, you can check Instagram. They have a website. You can check what people like comment to those stores. Mm. But back then it was really all based on a very personal level.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Dill never been to Berlin, or he's been once, but before like, yeah, Foley, I know you. Of course, I trust you. If you open a shop, I think it's probably in a really good surrounding.
Mm.
And in the opposite, that's the same way how we choose nowadays stores where we sell our Syphilis stuff to. You know, it's like, you know, we want to know in which kind of environment we are. And we were super lucky back then when Hess and me, when we opened the shop, that we got to know all those cool people. And they were all like down from the first minute because they all knew Berlin, even if they haven't been there, but they heard about it in newspapers, magazines and stuff. So it was a pretty tight, small little scene back then when I look back at the opening of the store. And but we had like a small, fine selection of brands that no one else carried in Germany.
That's true. And can you remember the turning point when basically the whole Syphilis thing changed from really feeling like a business instead of just feeling like an opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at a certain point, I think when Hesse and me, when we split up again, when he left the company, like Syphilis.
When was that?
At 31st of October 2014. Now I remember.
That's very specific.
No, because we posted a photo on Instagram on that day because it was Halloween.
Ah, okay.
And we all went out, like was Marcus, Julian, I think Peggy was there and one other guy from the store. Mm. And I think we went to a bar in Mitte, got like really drunk. And we posted this photo on Instagram because I think Peggy was like had some painting on her face, like whatever. So that's why I remember this specific date.
Okay.
So we got really fucked up, and we had some issues, and he left. And from that point on, I was getting. I had more responsibilities, not only like on the creative part of the thing, which was basically my part from the beginning, not like only creative, but I'm more the person that talks to people that through traveling met tons of people. But of course, when he left, running a shop isn't only like spending time in the shop and drink and this and that. There is, of course, also like some other jobs to do, like paperworks and this and that. So from that point on, it started to get way more serious, you know, because you have to pay the taxes and do all those paperworks and stuff like that. Yeah, it became more and more like a grown-up, like an adult life. Mm-hmm. Before, it was always like, yeah, whatever, you know. And this is because all of a sudden you see, oh, this is not like a game anymore where you can just like, no, I don't do this anymore. I don't go to the shop. I don't open the door. You're responsible.
Yeah.
More and more. I mean, I was it before, but it was on two shoulders.
It's
all
a different thing.
It's a different thing. And so in this period, I had to learn a lot and it taught me a lot. And it probably changed me as well because all of a sudden you see things a bit more, serious because there's more attached to it than your own personal life.
Right.
Because there's people working for you. You know, they have expectations and they want to grow with the store as well. And it's not something where I can just say, no, today I'm not opening. I have to be there. I have to be, I'm the boss, so to speak. Mm. I'm probably not like the typical kind of boss, but of course you are responsible for like people. And it got more serious, you know. And actually, I never really wanted that because I always thought like
that's the weirdest part, right?
It is. It is really because I always thought, oh, it's always like life is so easy, nice. Drink with your friends, shoot some photos, sell some T-shirts. But it got, of course, more serious. Mm. And
I'm obviously that's just like. Like theoretically, but like what would have happened, let's say like after half a year or whatever, like when you then have figured out like that you're actually not really comfortable, like all of a sudden being the band leader, so to speak?
Good question. I mean, I sometimes ask myself those questions, like what would happen if I would have chosen like a different direction for whatever reason. If it was like, okay, I'm it's too much for me. I don't want to be this leading person in a small little company. It's really, really hard to say. Even to say like where I would be right now, if I would have said like whatever, like 4 years ago or 5 years ago, or nearly 6 years ago when Hesse left, where I would be right now. But of course, I think a lot about it. Like, and this is something I have in mind a lot of the times, because for me personally, it seems like a daily routine is nice to have in till a certain point. But right now, even like with doing the store and our own brand, it's like internally we're talking about, okay, dude, we need to do some more, something new. You know, it's like constantly like doing the same thing. You know, the same thing as with doing a magazine.
Of course.
You have a deadline. Okay, this. You need advertisements and you need this and that and this. And this is always back and forth, like Groundhog Day kind of thing. Yeah, in a way. You know, it's because it's always repeating. Even if you, in between, like, shoot or interview different kind of people, but there is, like, a routine. You know, okay, the deadline is on that day. I have to finish this. For me, it's the same thing with, like, okay, I have to order this brand, that brand, because there's a deadline, and then there's new stuff. Then you post the stuff. It's always the same thing. You get really into a routine. I can say for myself, like the first couple of seasons, I was like super hyped always seeing the new lookbook or catalog from a brand.
Right.
Now it's more or less like, oh, dude, it's already like 3 months ago when we ordered the last time. Another 180-page PDF file and going through like, do we take this t-shirt or that t-shirt? So that's why in my case with the store, it's really good to have younger people there.
Yeah.
Because they're really into this shit.
I mean like referring to the target group you're about to hit, like obviously that's essential.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But this is also something I think, and this goes for a lot of people, you have to learn and accept for yourself that like I'm definitely not the target group anymore from what I'm selling in my shop. Of course, I wear shoes as well, but I'm not lining up. Yeah, absolutely. But when I'm sitting in front of a like catalog with 180 pages with t-shirts and this and that, I'm really, really thankful that I have all those people working with me in the shop where they say, yeah, I like this one. Yeah, let's take this color. I always go for the black and white color, you know, some like the younger kids like, hey, take the whatever like beige t-shirt or take the green or the red or the blue. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, I'm not the one, you know, I wear black and white, but please do so. Be honest. Don't be shy. I'm not the boss and I'm not like ripping your head off if like a certain t-shirt color doesn't sell, but I need this input. And I think this is for the business we're working or I'm working with the shop. Really, really important, you know, because I know shops from back in the days that haven't like, you know, living up and changing because there's a new generation coming.
I mean, obviously, like to a certain degree, like this kind of like evolution happens naturally, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But when obviously, like when there's business involved, that's a different thing. Like then you really just can't let it happen that easily sometimes.
Exactly, yeah. But that's why I think it's really important that you surround yourself with a good group of people that, you know, work with you, whatever project that is. Because I think for some people that work with me at Civilist, I teach them some stuff because I'm older. But they also teach me some stuff that it's like really, really necessary sometimes to let go, you know, when it comes to certain things in the shop, because they're way more experienced what's happening right now on the streets because they're like still skating and this and that. And I'm really, really lucky that I have those people around our shop that, you know, I can easily ask, like, hey, should we order this? Because I'm like, I wouldn't probably, but I learned from them. They're like, hey, let's go for this one. Yeah. And this helps me as well a lot and takes some, like, you know, pressure off me, because I want to have the shop being around for a couple more years. And that's why it's important. If you have like a good crew of people and you believe in them and you trust them. So,
I mean, like that's the crucial point. I mean, when it comes to a store like Civilist, regardless of your age, I think, and regardless of your gender, you feel like that you're not just entering a store. It's more like that you're entering like a clubhouse, basically, which is then guided in this case like by you.
Yeah, it is. Even that sometimes it's like being the oldest in the whole crew. Sometimes, yeah, pretty hard because they're like half my age and they're like have the oldest energy and they want to drink this, that, and I'm like, yeah, relax, chill. But that's always what we wanted to achieve, and that's what we tried since day one, to make this place more or less like a modern kind of a youth club. Right now, because of the whole situation, it's a bit tougher.
Yeah.
But it was back then when we opened the shop, when I saw you guys like 3-4 days a week, you know. Now you and all like my older friends, they have their families, their businesses, yeah. So and the time is pretty tight. So there's now, of course, like I think 2 new generations there in the shop. And even if I'm like sometimes like really like pissed because they always come there and they don't really see that we have stuff to do, even that there is no one in the shop. Mm. I kind of totally understand and I kind of love it because I was the same.
That's the thing. Like you would have done the very same thing like 20 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. So at least you have to try, even if it's hard. You know, sometimes you have to say to yourself, hey, fuck it, Foley, it's whatever. They're here. I mean, you know, maybe some of those guys will maybe not ending in or working in retail in the future, but I see so much potential with all these. And it's super nice to give them like a platform. And I connected a lot of people already with some brands or with like an agency. And it's really nice to see how they evolve. Because
are you talking about the Brunn boys or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the boys of Brunn, so to speak. Like there is so much potential and all these things, like even with the boys of Brunn. I mean, this was just like a fucking hashtag that we used. And, you know, all of a sudden, like after half a year or like a year, like there was like this agency or this magazine hitting us up like, hey, like those boys of Brunn, because they're all like pretty cute, good-looking guys, you know. They were like, hey, yeah, we need some people to shoot for like a campaign or for an article and stuff. And we heard about the boys of Brunnen. Mm. And it's so funny to see how you know, this was just happening naturally as a hashtag for like a photo. And yeah, especially out of this group, there's so many talented young kids or, yeah, twins or whatever, how old they are. And it's really, really nice to see how they now, at the early beginning of their life, paving their way through being a photographer or doing their own label or getting into music or design. And this really makes me happy. And this is something that, yeah, is really, really essential for the store. And I think this is something that separates our shop. Also on these days with like the whole COVID thing from lots of other shops, because it's not like a place where you just go, take this €5, buy. It's more or less like people come to the hangout. The hangout, they get like Rip Tape for free, of course, you know, and then, and this is something that we always wanted to achieve. And when you look at other cities or other shops, this is actually like a pretty good concept because all the brands and stores that I look up to or inspired by, they did the same. If it was true. Back in the day when it was like the Supreme shop,
exactly,
you know, yeah. like there were always people hanging out there. Unfortunately, nowadays they can't really do it anymore because it's
this is over, man.
It's over. But I remember like how it used to be when they were hanging out in front of the shop in New York and stuff like that. And this was something back then when we were there, we did the same thing. When we came to New York, when I was there for like 6 months in the US, yeah, go to the shop, talk to the people, they can tell you where a nice pizza spot is and this and that. And so I think this is a pretty good concept to do.
Yeah.
You know, working more as a club, as like just a regular store.
Yeah. Like when it comes to the Civilist in-house brand, I mean, like it already started when Hesse was still on board. What's the vision, so to speak, like with Civilist as a brand? And would you say like that? I was always wondering, like Civilist, like at this point, is like really well known internationally. Is it because of suddenly also put more focus on the in-house brand as well, or what was the magic there?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting question where I also like sometimes think about, okay, how we manage this. But I think this goes back to the question before, because we were always like an open house for all people that came to Berlin, like skateboarders from all over the world. When they came to Berlin, they came to our shop.
But that's the thing, like, I mean, yeah. like you're not like a core store, so to speak, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. But it's because even that we're not a core store, of course, like in the last few years, we focused more on like hardware as well. But since our background isn't skateboarding, as a photographer for magazines, doing the shop for quite some time, knowing the right people, doing collaborations with like Van Syndicate back then, with Nike SB. Then, of course, like when the whole social media thing, you know, like started to get bigger and bigger, and like people could easily check before they came to like Germany, like, hey, or Berlin, where should we go? I think this goes a bit hand in hand with like, we saw that we got more and more like international feedback as well because of people coming to Berlin. Then the collaborations, and of course we had so many ideas because we're selling clothing that we can like, oh man, we should do a t-shirt with this and that. So I remember back in the days when we started, we had mostly like blank t-shirts with nothing on it.
Exactly true.
Pretty, we're still working with the same factories and stuff like that. But of course we decided, hey, if we sell t-shirts, it would be cool if there would be somehow our name visible, so that people, when they go skate or wear it, that they see, oh, that's a nice shirt. Ah, oh, it's Civilist. So I think these things go hand in hand. We have touched a million t-shirts by selling them for other brands. So of course we were 100% sure that this is another like business we want to do, the shop, and then of course our own brand. And I think we were quite right with this decision, because now seeing how many shops we're selling to, and seeing with all the collaborations we did, like just especially recently the Nike SB shoe, and this lifted us of course to like a whole new group of people, because SBs are so hype, the Dunks. So this definitely helps our own brand as well. And of course when we sell our clothing to a shop in like whatever, South Korea or Tokyo, and people wearing like a Civilist t-shirt in Tokyo, other people like that maybe never heard of us, seen us, you know, like a Civilist shirt, maybe they go on Google or they ask the guy or they like the design, whatever. So I think these things go hand in hand. But for us, it was 100% decision pro doing our own clothing and also like selling it to other shops, because as I said before, like we know from our past how brands like Supreme started as a store selling like store t-shirts. Look where they are now, you know. And of course it was like a no-brainer to decide like, hey, let's go away from like just blank t-shirts and do like designs, then do a hoodie, do bags, socks, and all these things. This was just like a natural thing because the shop itself was working. So we were like, okay, what else could we do?
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's sometimes weird because I'm a part of Civilist and sometimes I try to step away to have like a look to the shop or to the brand or to the label or whatever you want to call it from the outside to see like, okay, where are we standing? I mean, of course, I can somehow see and get feedback through social media because this got way more easier nowadays to get direct feedback.
Yeah, sure.
With whatever you do. If you post a photo of a certain product or if it's your own product or whatever, so you get feedback right away. But I think, and this is still like one of the jobs that we have to do really, really, with 100% focus on, is finding always like new brands as well that no one else carries, but everybody knows of because of social media.
Yeah.
Like right now, like I'm in contact with like two or three brands that the people in like the core skate world know, but there is a potential within these brands that they could be also bigger and be also for a wider audience. So like those kind of brands we're always trying to dig out, and it's more or less like a curation.
Exactly.
Yeah, so why should someone from whatever Neukölln or from wherever should go to Mitte and come to our shop if it's stuff that is available everywhere? I mean, of course, it's available online. You know, you can buy a shirt from a certain website in wherever. But somehow they maybe want to have the experience and come to the shop. So I think this is something that keeps us all for quite some time on a pretty good level, because we always find those, at least till today, those like small, cool brands that have potential and where we see, oh, it's not only bought by regular customers that come in by accident, but also by, you know, like the core people. They're like, fuck yeah, now they got this brand. And I think this is something that is really, really important that keeps Civilist as a shop always like, you know, I don't know really like a word for it, fresh or whatever you want to call it.
Real.
But you know, like I see when I tell those younger, like our crew, when they come to the shop and I tell them like, hey, we are in contact with this brand and we will get this for the shop. And they're like, yeah, fuck man, that's so nice because I've seen this in New York, like a few guys were wearing it and I love it. And this is always like a really nice feeling because, you know, they can buy it online if they want to, but the people and the kids in our shop, they rather buy it in our shop. So they're super stoked. And I also ask these young kids like, hey, where is a new brand that we maybe should carry that separates us from all the other shops?
Right.
So I think this is like a really, really important thing, but also goes then back to what I said earlier, that you need to have the right people, because since I'm the oldest one in this group, like my interests maybe like shift more towards, oh, I want to live in nature maybe someday or whatever. So you need the right people that have still also the same passion about, or like skateboarding, yeah, this is a brand that no one else got.
Yeah.
You know how it is. If it's not really available for the whole world, then it's the demand gets like bigger and bigger, you know? So I think this is something that keeps us, you know, on a quite good level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so, man.
Yeah. Me too. It's, it's interesting because, I mean, right now we're in a really crazy stage here on this whole planet, you know, and it's
that's the thing, you know, like what you mentioned earlier, like that obviously like everything is available for everyone like 24/7, but you need to create this kind of like experience like through the store and through the people who work there and stuff, that people really would love to go there like a second or third time or whatever. Now in times like where these kind of things are not that easy anymore because of the restrictions and because obviously like a place like Berlin like is suffering from the lack of tourists, because of the travel ban and shit. So what do you think about like the forthcoming year? What has it in stock for you?
I mean, knock on wood, luckily, like, we weren't that crazy affected through the whole like pandemic thing, mm-hmm. as probably, yeah, all the nightclub businesses and bars and restaurants and stuff like that, because skateboarding is very stable at the moment. But you're totally right. And since we can't really predict what's coming next year, what I somehow think is that people, and I mean, luckily we did this already in the last 11 years, I think the local aspect gets more and more important again in the future. Mm. And this goes, you know, our shop is a hangout spot. And, you know, back in the days, of course, we did more exhibitions and showed videos and stuff like that. But just in general, it's getting more and more local, because who knows when we can travel again, like regularly. Yeah, sure. When is the chance to go to LA again without wearing a mask, going to a restaurant or walking down the street? Mm. So I think somehow I'm very positive when it comes to our shop. And you're totally right, like the millions of tourists, they're definitely like missing and stuff like that. Still, there is lots of people coming. Just for us here in Berlin, we think that it's definitely getting everything is global, as you said. You can buy shit 24/7 whenever you want. If you wake up in the night, you can order a t-shirt from Tokyo or Mexico or whatever. But I think in general, like, people getting more and more back like to more local things when it comes this whole food movement about like getting more like local stuff, if it's like vegetables, this, that, whatever. So I'm positive for the next year. I can't really say what's happening. I mean, for us, we have lots of things coming up with the store and the brand.
It's just like collabs in the pipeline, right?
Some collaborations, which were supposed to happen earlier, but you know, like it is as it is. And we have some ideas of maybe expanding, you know, doing something more for the local community, if it is like a park, an indoor skate park, or another place where they can hang out, like a modern youth club or whatsoever. There isn't anything like confirmed, but these are things that I have in mind now, especially seeing the winter is coming. It's not cold, but it's dark early, it's cold, you know, and, you know, do something for the next generations and giving them another platform instead of just hanging out in the shop all the time. for next year, let's see. I mean, the shop is doing okay. The brand is doing better and better, so we might expand on this. But for all the rest, I think we just, let it go. Like, as I did mostly in my life, things happen by accident. You know, sometimes you run into a person that you weren't expecting, and all of a sudden you connect, and out of this, there's a new idea developing and stuff.
That's
like
exactly
that. So I try to keep this for myself instead of like overthink everything too much, because most things came definitely differently from what I've thought they will be. So let it go and see what happens.
Alex, thank you so much for having spent some time with us here.
Thanks for having me. It's I really enjoyed it. I need more beer now and maybe another.
You will have a lot more in a minute, man.
No, definitely. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was
a pleasure. Good. Pleasure to have you. And then I guess we see each other anytime soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
Till then.
All right. Bye.